A decision by Governor Scott Walker is still pending as to the future of a proposed Menominee casino in the Kenosha area. The plan, which also includes a partnership with Hard Rock International, is strongly opposed by the Potawatomi tribe. It says the project would take away business from its Milwaukee casino.
For UW-Madison Professor Patty Lowe, the casino debate is just one of the modern challenges facing Wisconsin's tribes. But as she's documented in her book, Indian Nations of Wisconsin, they have also endured and made great advancements in the last several decades. The book is in its second edition.
Lowe, who will talk about urban Indians in Milwaukee tomorrow afternoon, explained last year to Lake Effect Stephanie Lecce why she believed the book deserved an update.
I had serious regrets almost immediately after the first edition was written because I didn't have a chapter on urban Indians. And more than half of all Native people in Wisconsin live in Milwaukee, Madison, Green Bay, and other urban areas in Wisconsin. So it was a serious omission on my part, I'm afraid. And then when I originally wrote the book, the first edition, the brother town were sort of awkwardly piggybacked onto the Mohican chapter because there was very little known about them. They were just beginning the federal acknowledgement process. They were terminated back in the 1830s and have been attempting to be a federally recognized tribe ever since then. And it wasn't until the last decade, that effort got some traction. And so now there was material in order to justify a complete chapter on the brother town.
Obviously, each tribe has experienced different things, but have you noticed in the last 13 years certain trends in terms of what the different tribes throughout Wisconsin have been experiencing?
Well, certainly with the Ojibwe, the big challenge has been mining. And back in the mid-1990s, the Mole Lake Ojibwe or Sokagon Ojibwe and the Forest County Potawatomi and to a lesser extent, the Menominee and Oneida were facing a large sulfide copper mine. And those tribes, in connection with a lot of mainstream environmental groups, were able to meet that challenge. And in fact, the Potawatomi and the Mole Lake actually purchased the mine site in order to prevent that area from becoming a sulfide mine. Currently, the Bad River Ojibwe are facing a massive open pit taconite mine at the headwaters of their Rice River. And so mining especially is something that quite a number of the tribes are very concerned about. The other issue that I think is a common theme is the land into trust issue. All of the tribes have experienced that, but probably the Oneida, for them, that issue has been perhaps more contentious than it has been for other tribes.
Well, what does that mean, land into trust?
What it means is the Oneida have been buying back land that was originally part of their reservation and putting that land as they are entitled to back into trust through the Bureau of Indian Affairs. And reservation land is not taxable. And so the land that passed out of their hands because of the Allotment Act in the 19th century, the Oneida lost more than 90% of their land. And so now they've been buying it back and putting it back into trust. Well, that land is coming off municipal tax rolls and increasing the burden, individual tax burden for non-Indians in those municipalities where that land has come from. So this has been an issue. And the way the Oneida have met it is to negotiate service agreements, you know, paying for roads or paying for police or fire protection or those kinds of municipal services in order to ease the tax burden on individual mainstream taxpayers.
What do both of these issues, both the land into trust and the environmental concerns, tell us about how Indian tribes are organizing and their political agency today in Wisconsin?
Well, certainly the recognition of sovereignty and treaty rights, something that really began in the 1970s and really we're seeing it now, and the acknowledgement of municipalities like Brown County and the city of Green Bay in just simply referring to the Oneida Nation as the sovereign Oneida Nation. Surrounding municipalities are starting to understand that there is another layer of government between municipal government, state government, U.S. government. Now we're reminded that there are tribal governments as well. And so it tells us that Native communities are beginning to flex some of that political muscle. But because there's so much pushback and backlash in some cases, especially surrounding environmental issues, it tells me that Native communities perhaps haven't gotten to the level where the communication is flowing as well as it should be.
You include a new chapter in this edition on urban Indians. Why do they need their own chapter?
I think because the urban experience for Native people is a unique one. It's a pan-Indian environment. You have people from tribes all over the country who are trying to retain their identity as Native people. However, they don't have access to the services that their tribal nations would normally provide for them. Health, education, welfare, all those things that we as citizens, whether you're a Native citizen or a U.S. citizen or a state citizen, enjoy in our lives. And Native people don't have access to that in many cases. And so they've had to create a different kind of social network and social service network in Milwaukee, as an example, because there's certainly Native people living in Madison and Green Bay and Eau Claire and La Crosse and many other urban areas. But imagine in the 1950s, your family arrives because you've answered an ad basically from the Bureau of Indian Affairs that tells you, come, move to the city. And you see the brochure has beautiful gleaming skyscrapers and happy Native people doing mainstream type jobs. And you've been promised that you'll get job retraining and that your life in the city is going to be wonderful. And instead, basically what you have is a one-way bus ticket to the center of town and directions to a flop house. And there are no services. And now not only, you know, are you cut off from your tribal services, but you're cut off from your culture and your language and your ceremonies. And it's been a real struggle for Native people. And, you know, we do see some successes because of organizations like the American Indian Chamber of Commerce and the First American Capital Corporation and some of the other economic engines that we've seen come up, you know, grow in Milwaukee. Indian Summer Festival, more than anything for me, really embodies how far urban Indians have come, that now there's this three-day festival that attracts thousands, tens of thousands of people celebrating traditional and contemporary Native music, art, food, fellowship. And, you know, if I can get just a little personal, my mother, who has lived in Milwaukee most of her life, told me she cried after that first Indian Summer Fest because, you know, for so long she was made to feel like she should be embarrassed and apologized for her Native identity. And here, you know, this celebration of Native culture, you know, for the first time as an urban Indian made her feel proud.
Patty Lowe is author of Indian Nations of Wisconsin, Histories of Endurance and Renewal, published by the Wisconsin Historical Society Press. Our interview first aired last year. Lowe will talk about Native Americans, especially in urban Wisconsin, tomorrow at noon at the Milwaukee Central Library as part of the Wisconsin History Tour.
Coming up after a break, celebrated American folklorist and performer Stephen Wade has settled into a two-month run at the Milwaukee Rep's Stackner Cabaret. He and two of his banjos will entertain us next in Lake Effect's performance studio after a short break.